Alrighty. Erev Tov to everybody. Good evening and welcome. Kol hakavod to all of you for coming out at night. It's not easy to get out of your houses at night, and I appreciate that you come to share your wisdom with me and give me your insights on the part that we're learning together. So I thank you for sharing the time. Tonight we're going to talk about Parshat Behar. We're not going to talk about the first Rashi in Parshat Behar for too much, but I can't let it pass by. You know the phrase, what does that have to do with the price of tea in China?
Right.
So in Hebrew, that phrase, the parallel to the phrase is Matinyan Shmita Eitzel Harsinai. That's the parallel phrase to what does that have to do with the price of tea in China. In other words, what does that have to do with anything? And that phrase is... origin is from the Rashi on the sixth parsha, the first Rashi, where the Torah begins, the parsha begins, it's on page 696 and 697, by Deber Hashem El Moshe Behar Sinai, Laimor. Hashem spoke to Moshe on Har Sinai to say the following, Deber al Bnei Yisrael, speak to the Jewish people, Vamarta Lehem, tell them, Ki Tavou El Haaretz Asher Ani Noten Lachem, when you come to the land that I am giving to you, v'shavta aret shabbat l'Hashem. You have to let the land rest for a Shabbos for Hashem. And these are the laws of Shemitah. So Rashi asks the question, almost never does Hashem specify to us where he's talking to Moshe. Usually it's v'yidaber Hashem al Moshe le'mor. Hashem said the following to Moshe, for the purpose of him to repeat it to the Jewish people. And yet here begins v'yidaber Hashem al Moshe behar Sinai. Anymore. So he asked the question, Ma inyan shmita itzel har Sinai? That's the famous question. It's the second, where the second place parsha in, right, I didn't say never, very rarely. You know, that's how the beginning of Parsha Bemidbar begins, with an exact location of where the Jewish people are, as is the beginning of Devarim, although the beginning of Devarim is fake. It's not really, those aren't real places necessarily, according to some Mefarshim. In the beginning, Parsha Devarim. Yeah.
I'm sorry, didn't mean to interrupt.
Well, go ahead. I can talk forever. You can always interrupt me.
Question. Behar. Why Behar instead of Alhar?
That's also a very good question. So Rashi answers it, and you can all look it up on your own at home. But tonight we're going to talk about Shemitah. And there. No, I'm not going to say the answer. I had a teacher, a Chumash teacher. Good evening, ladies. I'm happy to say I don't have enough papers for everybody, so I have one more packet, and if the rest of you will share. These two seats are available. Here's a seat here. Sharon, maybe you'll share with your mother the handout. Thank you very much. When I was in 11th and 12th grade, I had a Chumash teacher that because of her, I became a Chumash teacher and unwittingly even modeled my own Chumash classes after her classes to me. I found that out because I found my father's notes would be from like back to school night. And I, you know, where he wrote down. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. I'll pass it along. Where he wrote down the notes from back to school night of how she said that was her method of teaching, and I said, wow, that's exactly how I do things. But so she used to ask all these questions. That was what we used to do. We used to read the parak, we'd read the psukim, and we'd come up with all these questions, and we'd ask these questions. And then we'd have 20 questions or 30 questions, depending on the length of the parak, and then she'd pick like four. And those are the ones that we go into in depth. And she said, because the important part of learning really is noticing that there's a question there. You'll have the rest of your life to find the answers. But, you know, when you put the intellectual effort into finding the question, that's the enjoyment of learning. You know, so I teach my students in high school in 11th and 12th grade, and I put a very heavy focus on Shailat Rashi, what's Rashi's question. And you could say, what are you talking about? That's what we did in second grade. But in second grade, actually, I'm going to change the language here. In second grade, you did Shailat Rashi, and almost always the question was, what does this word mean? And I can tell you as an adult that Rashi never asked the question, what does this word mean? And by 11th and 12th grade, it's why is this word used in this context the way that it is when it's so unusual? It's a whole different level of question, you know? So to ask the question shows the intellectual effort that you put in. And that's so I ask the question, and I leave it to you brilliant women to go home and find the answer on your own. But tonight, We're going to talk about Shemitah. Daber al b'nei Yisrael, he says, speak to Jewish people, when you come to the land of Israel that I give to you, the Shabtah ha'aret, you will let the land rest. Shabbat l'Hashem, as a Shabbat for Hashem. Yes, this is what we're learning.
Oh, I didn't know if you were still
doing. Yes, I'm sorry, we are. This is the last one of Vayikra, so next week bring Bamidbar, okay? Sheish shanim tizra shadcha, for 6 years you will plant your field. Vesheish shanim tizmor karmecha, for 6 years you will plant your vineyard. Va'asafta et vuatan, you will gather its produce. Uvashanah shvi'it shabbat shabbaton yihyeh al ha'aretz, and on the 7th year will be a complete rest for the land, shabbat l'Hashem, it will be for God. Shadcha lo tizra, you will not plant your field. V'charmecha lo tizmor, you will not plant your vineyard. Et sefiach kitzircha lo tiktzor, your produce, you're not going to, don't gather up your produce, that in vain is irecha lo tiktzor, and you're not going to gather up the produce of the vineyard. Shnat shabbaton yihyeh al ha'aretz, a complete rest will be for the land. Ma'ita shabbat ha'aretz lachem la'achla, and it will be the shabbat produce, the produce from the year will be yours to eat, ulecha for you, la'abdecha, la'amatecha, and to your servant, uleschircha, letoshamcha, hagarimimcha, the avdecha and amatecha are your slaves, and sechircha are your salaried workers. And toshavcha, the inhabitants who live among you, those who pay you rent, ulebehemtecha, and to your animals and all the wild animals in your land. In other words, the food at that point during the Shnat Shabbaton, you cannot harvest any of the food. You have to leave the land, and anything that grows belongs to anyone. So technically, during Shemitah year, if you walk down the street in Israel, and there's an apple tree in somebody's private front yard, and it's hanging over into the street, you feel free to pick an apple and eat it. Do they grow apple trees in Israel? I don't know. An orange tree, okay? Let's use oranges, do they?
No.
So that's the
apples?
In the back, we're very fortunate that we have here, in the back of this particular volume, we have all the biographical information. The Alshech spent most of his life in Tzfat. He lived in the 16th century. I'm on page 509. It's the first article for Parshat Bahar. He asked the following question. The Pasuk says, Daber al b'nei Yisrael v'amar t'lehem, speak to the Jewish people and say to them, Ki tavo al ha'aretz, when you come to the land, asher ani noten lachem, that I'm giving to you, v'sham ta'ar Shabbat l'Hashem, keep the land as a Shabbat t'Hashem. Mi'ashok asks the following question. When you come to the land which I give you, there is none who does not know that it is God who gives, for the earth is the Lord, and the fullness thereof. And this is also stated several times in the Torah, it therefore seems superfluous here. Why does the Torah mention it? So why does the Torah specifically say here, in terms of Shemitah, when you come to the land that I am giving to you? Of course we know you're giving to us because the whole land belongs to you, God. And anybody who's reading the Torah, it's a very interesting point he makes. If you're reading the Torah, you understand that Hashem gave us the land, although it's a little narrow-minded view of who's going to be reading the Torah. And later commentators assume that more people are reading the Torah than just Torah-observant Jews. But he at this point says, if you're reading the Torah already, you know, then you know that Hashem, that the whole land belongs to Hashem. So why does it say specifically the land that I give to you? It's a good question. So she adds in the middle, page 509. Man is possessed of a strong feeling of proprietorship. It's perhaps most strongly rooted in the peasant who dwells and lives on his own land. The sensation of mine is fraught with danger. It is to counter it that the Torah emphasizes the land is a gift from God, in order to remind him that not the power and the might of his hands have gotten him his wealth. In other words, why does the Torah specify here that the land that I am giving to you? Because it's very easy to fall into the trap, since you are actually working the land and you are growing the produce on the land and you are collecting it, hopefully take great pride in your work, that it's very easy for that pride to get to your head and for you to think, oh, this is all mine. So it's to remind you that it's not all yours, that it's from Hashem. But then we move on to the next part of the pasuk. On the top of page 510, the Shavtaha Aret Shabbat LaHashem. The land shall keep a Shabbat to the Lord. And Rashi's comments on that, and I brought it for you on source number one in the Hebrew, Shabbat LaHashem, L'Shem Hashem, for the sake of God. K'shem sh'ne'emar b'Shabbat Rishi, just like it's stated in regard to the Shabbat day, that the Shabbat is so closely connected to the creation of the world. So you're keeping the Shabbat. So since Shabbat in general is Hashem, Shabbat LaHashem is for the sake of God, why do we keep Shabbat? We keep Shabbat because it's a sign and a symbol that God created the world. Right? That's one of the reasons, that's the reason that's related to what we're talking about tonight. So the same thing also with the keeping the Shnat Shemitah, also it's about Hashem, that Hashem is the one who created the world. It's very closely connected. The commentators on Sifra and Rashi, super commentators, Rashi is quoting the Sifra, which is a Midrash. The commentators on Sifra and Rashi, super commentators, a super commentator is a commentator on a commentator. In other words, those who give us the Sifri Chachamim and the Gur Aryeh and the Mizrachi and all those people who look at Rashi and say, what is Rashi's question? And why is Rashi explaining this here? I taught a very difficult Rashi today to my students. I don't want to get into detail. I'll just tell you briefly what it was. Rashi says there are three mitzvahs that the Jews were commanded in Mara, which is where the first place that they camped after the splitting of the sea. They camped in this place, Mara. The water was bitter. They couldn't drink it. God showed Moshe a special tree. He threw the tree into the water. The water became sweet, and they drank it. And God gave them certain rules at that point. And Rashi quotes a Midrash, and he says the three rules he gave them are Shabbos, Paraduma, and civil laws. Civil laws, I understand. In order to live together, you have to set up a court system. You have to have like certain ground rules. Shabbos, even I understand, because for two reasons. One is that the next parasha is Maman, and you need to know about Shabbos because it connects to Maman very closely. You can't collect none on Shabbos. But also because Shabbos is a proof that God created the world, and you can't believe in that. Without believing in that, you can't accept the Torah, which is their next step. Right? But why Paraduma? It's a very difficult Rashi. So the commentators, the super commentators, go on and on and on. And by the way, just to tell you briefly, the conclusion that some of them have is that it's an editorial error, that Rashi wrote it in an abbreviation, because there's a version of the Midrash that said it was Kibbut Ava'im, not Paraduma. So Kaf Aleph could be mistaken by an editor as Pei Aleph, perhaps, because they look similar, whatever. That's one answer, but there are other answers also. But the super commentators are going to ask the question of Rashi, what is Paraduma doing in here? One of these things is not like the other. It doesn't belong, right? So, you know, why do they need the rest of Paraduma now? You know, either they should have had it before they did Korban Pesach, or they don't have it until they do the Mishnah. They don't need it now, really. There's no need for it now. I don't want to get into it in detail now. I want to continue. But the point is, in terms of Rashi's super commentators. So the commentators on Sifra and Rashi's super commentators observe that none of the festivals, not even Yom Kippur, is predicated Shabbat LaHashem. This distinction is fallen only to the Shabbat day and the Shabbat year, meaning Shemitah, indicating a close link between them. So the only two special times that the Torah calls Shabbat LaHashem is Shabbos and Shnat Shemitah. Indeed, we find a juxtaposition of the two in Parshat Mishpatim. The Pesukim in Parshat Mishpatim first talk about Shemitah. Sheishanim tizra artecha, v'ashatha etzulatah. For 6 years you're going to plant your land, you're going to gather your produce. V'ashvi'it tishmetena v'natashta. In the seventh year you should let it rest and let it lie fallow. And then it talks about Shabbos, Sheishet Yamim Tashem Ashracha, you're going to do your work for 6 days, Vayom HaShvi'i, and on the seventh day, Tishbot, you're going to rest. So the exact same kinds of setup, you know, the 6 years, the 1 year, the 6 days, the 1 day, very clear connection between Shabbos and the year of Shemitah. But even if you look in our psukim, these six psukim that talk about the Shnat Shemitah, seven psukim, that's in six psukim, that talk about Shnat Shemitah, you also have here a very close connection between the Shnat Shemitah and the Shabbos day. So look on page 511, where she brings the psukim, she breaks it up in sections. But I'm going to skip to her next page where she explains what she's pointing out, because we've read these psukim already. In the middle of 512, and I'll show you what she's talking about. We note the poetic style of these verses, the metrical harmony between the verses dealing with field and vineyard. listen to the metrical harmony. You know what meter is in a poem is da 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 da. That's an iambic pentameter meter. Meter is the rhythm, the inflection, you know, and that's what it is. So just listen. You have the field on one side and the vineyard on the other side. In Pasuk Gimel, it says, Sheishanim tizra sadacha, the Sheishanim tizmar karnecha. You hear that? For the field, for the vineyard. Now in the next one, Pasuk Dalet, Sadcha lo tizra, v'charmacha lo tizmar. Also, the field on one side, the vineyard on the other side. The beginning part's like, hey, etzifiach ketzircha lo tiktor, v'etzanvei nizirecha lo tiktor. There you even have a rhyme. You know, the meter there is that some could argue that that's very significant. But you also have, she talks about also the chiasmus. Remember the chiastic parallel that we spoke about, the A-B-B-A? I'll remind you in case if you didn't remember. This line is A, this line is B, okay? So this is your parallel. Old King Cole, that was an example that you remember? Okay. Old King Cole was a merry old soul, and a merry old soul was he. Right? Old King Cole was he. It's a merry old soul and a merry old soul. It's the same thing, but it's just in the flip order. So you have the same kind of thing here. When you're talking about planting the field, when it talks about the positive, that for the 6 years you're going to plant your field, it says for 6 years, sheishanim tizra sadecha, v'sheishanim tizmor karmecha. For 6 years plant your field, and for 6 years plant your vineyard. But then later on, when it says not to plant your field, at the end of Pasuk Dalet, it says sadecha lo tizra, your field you should not plant, v'charmecha lo tizmor, and your vineyard you should not plant. It flips the order of the subject and the predicate.
Does tizmor mean to plant? I thought it meant to prune.
Okay, to take care of it. Yeah. I was explaining tizmor with, because I wanted to show the parallel with, but yes, correct.
Because I haven't been, I mean, we haven't.
And you also know Hebrew much better than me.
No,
okay. Okay. All right. Now, this is one thing that's very interesting in terms of this. It's important to point out the poetic style of the verses. That's point one that she makes. Now, in the end of page 512, she points out something else. Derivatives of the root Shabbat appear 7 times, either in verb or as a noun. Okay, let's count it. This is like back to Sehillim class, right? How many times the Shoresh appears? So here we have Shabbat, the word Shabbat, right? You have two, at the end of Pasuk Get, V'shavta ha'aretz is one. Shabbat la'Hashem is two. Pasuk Dalet, you have Shabbat, Shabbaton, that's two more. And Shabbat la'Hashem, that's number 5. And then in Hey, you have Shnat Shabbaton is number 6. And in Pasuk Vav, v'hayta Shabbat ha'aretz. And that brings us to 7. I double-checked it before I came. I didn't take her word for the excellent mark of it. She got it. Right. Okay. So 7 times. Now, this is reminiscent of the first chapter of Bereshit, she said, which is divided into 7 passages and where Kitov also appears 7 times. Now, I'll tell you, I found the actual formation of the phrase Kitov 6 times, but the 7th time, the concept is very much there. It just says V'hayah Tov Me'od. But it's the same kind of concept. Look on source number 2 on your page, where I brought it for you. You can see that I underlined Kitov. I divided into, you'll see, she brings to us from Professor Kasuto. Professor Kasuto was not an Orthodox man. This is one of the examples of Nachama using material from people who are not Yirei Hashem, but as long as the material that they bring does not contradict basic tenets of Judaism, she's happy to bring them, because indeed, and I find it very inspiring, the stuff that they say. Maybe they didn't see the Yad Hashem in what they're finding, but I certainly see the Yad Hashem in what they're pointing out to me. So here's what Kasuto says on top of 513, and I brought you source number 2, we're going to be using it together. He's talking about the first parak of the book of Reshit. The first verse contains 7 words. You can count it, I boxed it for you. Reshit bara Elokim, et ha-shamayim ve'et ha'aretz, 7. The second 14, meaning twice 7. You can count that too. I did. I boxed that for you also. The seventh passage, notice there are 7 passages that talk about the creation of the world, because the world is created in 7 days. You see, ignore the faint gray line on the bottom of each column. That's there because of, I don't know, I'm going to have to take it up with my, I'm going to have to find out what's going on with my scanner. But that ignore those faint gray lines, but the darker lines. See how I numbered them, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, on the side, 6, 7, there's 7 paragraphs. In the 7th paragraph, which talks about the creation, of the 7th day of creation, I underlined 3 verses, 3 units, that are each 7 words. Vayichal Elokim b'yom ha-shvi'i melech kol asher asah, Hashem finished all his work on the 7th day. He rested on the 7th day from all the work he had done. God blessed the 7th day and made it kadosh. Each of those 3 are also 7 words. Kasuso goes a teeny bit further. The number of words in that 7th passage is, you could either count them or look in the book.
Starting where you underline?
No, that whole paragraph, that whole number 7 paragraph. It's 35. 35, which is a dividend of 5 times 7. Right, 5 times 7. So it's Libyut.
Thank you.
Says Katsuta, I'm in the middle of page 513. The number of words in the 7th passage is 35, meaning 5 times 7. That all this is just coincidence is inconceivable. Indeed, many commentators consider that similarly to the Shabbat day, the remembrance of the creation is the main reason for the Shemitah year of rest for the land. And this is one of the reasons that Rabbi Yitzchak Arama states for the Shemitah year in his work Akedah Yitzchak. Its purpose is to bring home to us the truth. This is what the Akedah Yitzchak says. And to open our ears and illumine our hearts. I never heard it used that way before. Through great and wonderful signs. And to open the eyes of those who are steeped in the illusions of this world and are addicted to earthly labor. By seeing that they, the children of Israel, agreed to serve God out of love, he enlightened us and opened for us windows in order to open the blind eyes, to bring those that sit in darkness out of the prison house, and to bring out of prison those who are prisoners of their own greed, shackled by vain and futile things. He fixed periodical milestones in the course of our days, weeks, and years, which cannot go unnoticed unless we foolishly ignore them and are blind to them. We spoke about this actually as a theme when we learned in the Tehillim class, referring to that, when we spoke about the shir that the Levim said on Yom HaShabbat. He said that the focus of the Mizmor was not about Shabbos. He didn't mention Shabbos. It spoke about the wonders of Hashem. So he suggested that perhaps it's because Shabbos, why do we say that on Shabbos? Why did the Levim say that on Shabbos? Perhaps because Shabbos is the day when we can take a step back from all the mundanity of regular life and focus on the wonders of Hashem. What an amazing thing it is that Hashem gave us the opportunity to do that. But the 6 days of work and the 7th day of rest bear testimony that the world is created by God's will. And this is the genuine sign and symbol for truth of God's existence. And this is the most fundamental article of faith for every believer. This is what Yitzchak Arama says. This analogy between Shemitah and Shabbat is emphasized also by the author of the Meshech Chachma. The Meshech Chachma was a Rameir Simcha Kohen from Dvinsk. He was not so long ago, in, I think, the 19th century, I believe in the beginning or middle of the 19th century, maybe probably in the middle. The analogy between Shemitah and Shabbat is emphasized also by the author of the Meshech Chachma. And Shemitah, like Shabbat, testifies that the world is created by the Lord, for the land is mine. And he found a further allusion to this principle in the Torah. I actually brought it to you in source number 2, but she has it in the English. It's fine. In source 3, sorry. 6 years. The 6 years correspond to the 6 days of creation. Similarly, Torah Kohanim, which is a Midrash, points out that the 7th day of the creation and the 7th Shemitah year are both referred to as Shabbat LaHashem. It may be noted also that Ki Tov is stated twice, both on the 3rd and on the 6th day. You go back to source number 2. you will see that in the third paragraph and the sixth paragraph, there are two underlines for each. That is, by the way, the reason why there are many weddings on Tuesdays, because Tuesday was a good day.
Well, we always knew that Tuesday was a good luck day.
I don't know. Tuesday's pretty much as far from Shabbos as you can get. You know? No, but that's why Tuesday's a good luck day, because it's just two, just be told twice.
I never knew that. That's very interesting.
So that's the reason. It's based on something.
Weddings.
That's
very
interesting.
It's based on a real reason.
That's very interesting.
Actually, I think Tuesday. Well, Tuesday and Wednesday are pretty even on how far from Shabbos you can get.
Both
directions.
Each way. Yeah. That's right.
Here's what he said. This is great. Is therefore that the tithe for the poor must be given every third and sixth year in order to be good to one's fellow man. Good, huh? The Maaser Ani is given in the third year and the sixth year of the Shemitah cycle, because Ki Tov is written twice. And you need to be extra good to your fellow man.
Ki Tov is written twice for Tuesday.
And on Friday also. After he creates the people, the animals, and after he creates everything.
Okay, and the third one?
The third what? No, it's just twice. It's twice on the third day and twice on the sixth day.
I
think just that it's a dividend. I don't know how you want to say it. It's you can divide it evenly by seven. Seven is the number that he's looking for. I'm not sure. Yeah, because I don't have his actual Pirush at all.
No, 36 I could understand, but why not?
Because 35 can be divided by seven. The seven, he's going for the seven. The question is, what's the significance about a five by seven?
Right.
I would like to see a 7 times 7. Right. It would be a much neater. I mean, then it's right. So I'm just curious. Right. That's why it would fit so much better if that last paragraph had a 7 times 7. Then it would really fit with the Shemitah. So I'm not sure. I don't have a copy of his Perus for a brief sheet. So I have it. Actually, I might. I have the tech. I'm going to look at home. Okay. Where were we? All right. However, I'm in the middle of 5:14. He considers this only as one of the reasons for the Shemitah precept. And in another place, he makes the following observation. Here's what he said. The reasons for Shemitah are many and unfathomable, known only to God the omniscient. Then, let it be understood. Is indicated by Shabbat LaHashem. So he said that he gave that, the Ki Tov and the connection with Shabbos and with the creation of the world and all that stuff. That was one possibility of a reason for Shemitah. But he said, really, at the end of the day, we don't know why Shemitah's there. That's why Shemitah is specifically Shabbat LaHashem. Only Hashem knows and understands why Shemitah is there. The real reason. Really, you can take that for all of the mitzvot.
Yeah.
Except Shabbat LaHashem especially, you know, it's an unusual mitzvot perhaps. The reading of the text will show the conspicuous similarity between the Shemitah law and the commandment to rest on the Shabbat day. The designation of the Shemitah year as the Shabbat of the land is not without significance. The Torah thus bears out as being the most obvious reason, the one which underlies both the Shabbat day and the Shabbat year. And the principal reason for the Shabbat, without ignoring a wealth of reasons, including some mentioned in the Torah, is without a doubt, for in 6 days Hashem made heaven and earth. So thus you're showing this connection. The ideological importance of the belief in the creation of the world lies not in its lesson about the formation of the universe, but as Professor Gottman writes in his work, Dat Umada, Religion and Science, here's what he says. This is very interesting. Rather than in the origin of the world, faith is interested in teaching man about his origin. The ideological import of the account of the creation is to show man that God is master and lord of the world, the universe is his creation, and I am his creature. The point is not that Hashem created the world as much as Hashem created you. Since Hashem created the world, therefore Hashem created you, because you are part of the world. That's the real point, is how it relates to you individually as a person, that God created me. The idea of our dependence on God, says Nachama, his sovereignty and of our duty to accept the yoke of his commandments. I was just talking about that this week. Because Hashem created me, I owe it to him. He created the world. He knows what's best for me, because he created the world. He knows how the world is supposed to work. He told me I'm supposed to do these 613 things, some of which are easy, some of which are unbelievably inconvenient. But he said that this is the way that, this is the manual. You want to survive in this world, and this world, and the next world. I mean, all the worlds that God created. This is what you have to do. First of all, it's the smartest thing for me to do, to to follow him. But even that, he created me. What a lack of hakar tov would be for him to just throw his rule book in his face. Right? It's like...
But the robots rebelling against their creator.
Exactly. Well, not exactly, because I don't really consider, I don't want to say that we're keeping the mitzvot as robots.
Oh, but I'm saying,
way, right.
What business do they have, like...
Right, but who, like, Hashem made you. You know, you owe him, the very least you owe him. You know, how many of us, our parents said to us, you know, I am here, I brought you into this world, the least you can do. No, my parents never said that to me. They really didn't. But, you know, but I definitely heard my friend's parents say those things to them. You know, I gave you your car. The least you could do is pay for your gas. It's not get a driving ticket, XYZ. You know, I set you up. I gave you everything you needed. At least treat it with respect. You know, follow the rules of usage. Right? That's a very strong point he's making. The Shabbat and the Shemitah year are therefore reminders of God's creation of the world. However, not all commentators have accepted this as being the reason, and certainly not the only reason for the law of Shemitah. Now, this is, so far until now, we've said the known standard accepted reason for Shemitah, right? Why do we have Shemitah? Because the land doesn't belong to us, the land belongs to God, you remember that the land belongs to God, and all that stuff, right? Right? I'm sure you've heard that reason before. Now she's going to move into other reasons. In order to understand the various interpretations of the significance of the Shemitah year, we have to first know something about its basic rules. We'll content ourselves with two rules, referring to the rest of the world. And the Rambam brings them, and I brought them for you in sources 4 and 5. Source number 4. Mitzvat Aseh, it's a positive commandment. Rishbot ne'avodat ha'aretz ve'avodat ha'ilan. To refrain, to rest from working on the land and working on trees. That's the first mitzvah of Shemitah. The second mitzvah of Shemitah, in source number 5, mitzvat aseh, it is a positive commandment, lahashmit kol mashatotzi ha'aretz bashvi'it, to release all produce that comes from the land in the seventh year, shenamar, as it says, lahashvi'it tishmetana unetashta, as it says in our, actually, a little bit earlier it says this, by the seventh year, right, you should let it rest and lie fallow. V'chol ha-no'el karmo, anybody who lacks his vineyard, osag sadehu, or puts a fence around his field, v'ashvi'id, in the seventh year, v'tel mitzvah aseh, he violated a positive commandment. V'chein, and in addition, im asaf kol beirotav l'toch beito, if he hoarded all of his produce into his house, ela, Yafkir HaKol, rather what he should do is make everything hefker, abandon all. Ve'yad HaKol Shavin B'chol Makom. Anyone can have access anywhere. As the Pasuk says, back there in the Fatim, Ba'chul Avyonei Anacha, even the poor people of the land should eat. V'yesh lo lahavi l'toch beito, however, of course, he may bring into his own house the axe. He can bring a small amount into his house like you would take from any hefker stuff. In other words, don't hoard it all. You can take some for yourself, a reasonable amount. But you have to let it open for everybody. Those are two out of the three. There's a third mitzvah related to Shnachmita, which is absolving all debts and returning land to its original owner. Well, returning land to its original owner is Yovel, but absolving all debts, canceling all debts.
So you're saying you can't work the land or correct. The trees, but if something grows, you can use it.
Yes, you may use it. That also has, there are additional halachot with it, it also has kedusha. That fruit has a certain kedusha. So I was in Israel the year, it was Shemitah year, the year that I studied in Israel for seminary, and the Shemitah year next year again, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm sorry. You can't throw out the peel.
Mm-hmm.
It's like kadosh. You have to put it away and let it rot.
Right.
And
wrap it up.
Right.
You can't put it in the regular garbage pail.
Right. There was a holy catastrophic thing. Kadosh kedusha tree. It had a special kedusha to it of the Shemitah year. You know, it's all this really cool stuff.
Fields and
But you could pick what you want and what you need. You can go to anybody's field and pick anything. Unless, of course, you sold it to an Arab, in which case you can't, because it doesn't belong to you. But that's only if you think that you can sell the land of Israel, which is a whole big question in and of itself.
So wait a minute.
Yeah.
Why can you eat it if it's grown?
You can't harvest it. You can't work it.
You can't harvest it. You can't work it.
Right.
But you can eat it if it's produced
you
by itself.
In other words, you can't harvest it mechanically or commercially.
Yes.
You can't. You can pick it. 20 oranges.
What
that
you need.
Your family
that's
for
what
a
you
week.
Need.
But you can't do 2,000 bushels.
Okay.
Right. Yes.
A student asked me a question about planting flowers in Israel.
Uh-huh.
I asked my son-in-law. He said, "Well, look at this book on the first reading."
Okay.
You cannot plant flowers because you can't till the land to plant flowers. You can't dig up the land and make it loose to plant flowers. Mm-hmm. But you can pick flowers outside if they are not flowers that are famous for their smell. If you're taking them because they're beautiful smelling flowers, you can't even pick them. But you can pick wild flowers, and you don't have to divert water that's like flowing from your gutter so that nothing will grow there, but you can't do anything special to it.
You can't direct it to...
Right. You don't have to direct it away. Also, there's an interesting Rashi about that people might wonder, and they might say, since the whole year is called Shabbat, then we don't have to have Shabbat every week, because the whole year, people might say that. So there's a Rashi that says, don't say that. It's not because nothing uproots the pattern of every seventh day.
Right.
That's called Shabbat Bereshit.
Right.
That's been there from the very beginning. And even though the whole year is holy, Shabbat stays in this place.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So thus there are two precepts to be complied with by the Jew in the Shemitah year, which leave their imprint on life during that year. The suspension of all agricultural work and the renunciation of ownership of all agricultural produce declared in public property. We shall not now deal with the third precept, the cancellation of all monetary debts, which is mentioned in Parshat Re'eh. Whoever wishes to find a reason for the institution of the sabbatical year of the Lamb must bear in mind not only one, but both above-mentioned aspects of the Shemitah year. We present some of the views regarding the reason for the Shemitah laws in their chronological order, and will subsequently classify and compare them. Here we go. Rambam, Guide for the Perplexed. As to the precepts enumerated in the laws concerning the year of Shemitah and the Yovel is the 50th year in the cycle, which means we have 2 years in a row, the 49th and the 50th. Some of them imply sympathy with our fellow man and promote the well-being of mankind, for in reference to these precepts, it is stated in the Torah that the poor of your people may eat. And besides, the land will also increase its produce and improve when it remains fallow for some time. So he addresses both precepts, both the leaving the produce available for anyone to take is being kind to your fellow man. That's why you have to use Shemitah. And why are you not allowed to work the land? Because it's good for the land to leave it for a year. By the way, just a practical note. Those of you who know Ayala Urim, her father is a farmer. So every seventh year, he's out of a job. Really. He cannot work his land. So he learns, he teaches for a year. He, there's a different job like that.
Amazing.
Right, but he has to find another job. It's really,
His father came to America, though.
Uh-huh. We're listening to you. Find a job here.
Lucky for you.
It's a sabbatical year.
The first motive, that's where it comes from, the sabbatical, the kind of sabbatical, the rest from your regular work comes from Shemitah.
And wait a minute, so Shabbaton
is a sabbatical.
And how does that come to...
That's what this is called, a year of Shabbaton.
Oh, right, okay.
Shabbaton is like is a verb form of the word Shabbat, which is also a verb form, but it's also used as a verb.
Right.
What did I just say, a verb and a verb? Shabbaton is a noun, and Shabbat is also a noun, but it's sometimes used as a verb. I'm sorry if I confused you before.
Shabbaton was the verb.
No, that was wrong. Shabbaton is the noun. Okay. The first motive explains the precept of renunciation of all produce, and the second reason of purely agricultural one explains why the land must lie fallow. Now, this is a big problem. I just want you to understand. This is a very controversial comment to make, to say that we do something because it's like we do a mitzvah because it makes sense according to nature. Right? It's a very controversial comment to make, but the Rambam says it. Yes.
Well, if there's a master plan and it was all created by Hashem, then this is how he planned it.
Right. But there are people who are going to constantly be pushing to say the purpose of every reason is for spiritual development of ourselves.
But the other one,
understand? So I agree with you. I think it fits in very well with a natural plan. And Mama clearly did also as a naturalist.
You know. I have to say that there's only one reason.
So there isn't. Of course she's going to bring other reasons, but the subsequent people will only bring different reasons because they disagree already with the reasons that have been presented. There's something wrong with them. Right. Right. But often both reasons cannot coexist.
Well, somebody pointed out earlier in the chapter, which we didn't dwell on, that if not for having the seventh year, if Hashem didn't have a special setup for 6 years of good production,
right,
and an extra blessing to tide us over for 3 years,
right,
then we'd have to revert back to the general law of nature, which is people lose their fields fallow every other year,
right,
just in order to enrich the soil enough to be able to grow.
Right. So Hashem has a different system in mind.
How does Hashem expect there to be food for 2 years consecutively?
We're going to talk about it.
All right.
Are we going to talk about it? Or I might not have. Actually, that's right. That's the next page. No. Okay. 1 minute. Abravanel strongly disagrees with Rambam, and I brought it to you in source number 6 in Hebrew because she quotes, the truth is that this is not so. But you got to read it in the Abravanel. And I brought you the Abravanel because I just want to show you what it looks like. I've spoken about it before, but I'm turning to the beginning of Parshat Behar. And you can see here, at first he sets out all his questions, and then he gives you an essay of several pages in which he's going to answer all of the questions. So now you understand the joke that says when you read Rabbi Now you become an Afrikaris, because you sit down on Shabbos afternoon after the Talmud and all you get through are the questions. You never get any of your answers. So I brought you the Rabbi Now. This is like one of my dreams. That's my dream, to write in English about it now. It doesn't exist yet, but when I have free time, I'll let you know. Okay.
We'll be happy to proofread it for you.
Oh, thank you. You know, Abravanel, I told you about this. Abravanel was the finance minister to Ferdinand Isabella in Spain. And all of his writings were lost, and he was expelled from Spain. And he wrote them all from memory. He rewrote them from memory. It's unbelievable. Okay. Vihine harav hamoreh. He's talking about Rambam, Maimonides. And behold, the master, the teacher, the one who shows the way. Katab, he wrote, Shaya hatam b'shmitah l'shvot ha'aretz. The purpose of Shemitah is to let the land rest. Kedesha tosif teit koach l'zoreah. So that it can continue to give strength to the planter. In other words, it could keep working well. The ein hadavar king be'emet. That's not really true. That's how he says it. It's pretty strong language, you know? That's not really true. So here's it. She continues. Here. Abravanel adduces two arguments, and then I brought you his arguments, and then he gives you four more pages of what the real reasons are for Shemitah, by the way. Okay. So Abravanel adduces two arguments against Maimonides' view. One from verses 20 and 21, from whose text it is obvious that uninterrupted working the land for 6 years does not result in its weakening, but on the contrary, its yields will be exceedingly bountiful in the sixth year. This is his first year. Turn to verses 20 and 21 on page 700. The pasuk asks the question. V'chi tomru, you're gonna say. Man ochal bashana hashvi'it. What are we going to eat in the seventh year? Hein lo nizra, we're not planting anything. Lo nesof, it's guatena, we can't gather our produce. So the answer is, v'tziviti abirchati lachem b'shana hashishit. I will give you additional produce. I will give you a bracha. If you keep these mitzvahs, I will give you the bracha in the sixth year. V'asat et hatua l'shalosh shanim. That sixth year will produce enough produce for the sixth, seventh, and the first of the next cycle. That's what he says.
Pretty
supernatural. Okay, let's continue because we have to get to the end, and it's 10-2. Okay, if the Torah is concerned, so Ramna asked the question: if the Torah is concerned about the natural weakening of the land in consequence of working year after year, how then is it going to yield produce for 3 years? It's a good question. A counter argument could be that what the Torah promises is not a natural phenomenon, but as it explicitly states, this will occur if you keep Hashem's commandments. And he quotes the pasuk that we just read. The text and style of the verse indicate clearly a very special and wondrous blessing. However, there is another argument which motivates the rejection of the agricultural reason for the Shemitah law. We find that argument in Akedat Yitzchak 89, whose author also opposes this idea of Maimonides. And he brings this amid a Mishnah from Pirkei Avot, which I brought you in source number 7. Skip to the second to last line of the Mishnah. Galut ba'al olam. Exile comes to the world for the following four reasons. Alobdei avodah zarah, for serving false gods. V'al gilei arayon, on inappropriate relationships. V'al shvichot anim, spilling blood. Those are what we call the big three, outside of Israel. V'al shmitat ha'aretz, and for working the land. In other words, for a violation of the Shemitah year. Galut comes from a violation of Shemitah year. That's a pretty harsh thing to say, to put the violation of Shemitah together with the big three as being a reason for Galut. That's like pretty strong. So here's what the Akedat Yitzchak said. Our sages have said captivity comes into the world on account of XYZ and the neglect of the year of rest for the soil. Why should this transgression be punished so severely? If the suspension of work is for the benefit of the oil, of the soil, in conformity with the custom of farmers to let the land lie fallow for some years in order that it may gain strength and yield more, then their failing to keep the Shemitah law will be punished by the resulting poor crops. Why should they be punished with exile and captivity? It's a good point he makes. If your whole point of keeping Shemitah is because it's good for the land, then if you don't keep the Shemitah year, then it's not going to be good for the land. You're not going to have good crops. Isn't that enough of a punishment? What do you need the punishment of Galut for? Like, it has its own natural negative consequence. Other commentators adduce the text of the verse for their counter-argument, and I brought them to you on the last page. You can look at it if you want in your leisure time, but I will just read through in the English that she has here. The Kliarkar states, many affirm that the purpose of the rest of the land is to reinvigorate it and increase its yield. The master, meaning Rambam to Maimonides, also adopted this view. However, many commentators reject it, arguing that if that had been the purpose of the Torah to avoid the weakening of the soil, why should the violation of this law be punished by exile? Furthermore, in this case, the Shemitah year would not be Shabbat LaHashem, but for the benefit of the land. The Torah explicitly tells us, he adds a second reason for why the agriculture reason is not good. The first reason is because the punishment would not be galut. The second reason is because then Shemitah would not be called Shabbat LaHashem, it would be called Shabbat LaAretz. The Torah explicitly tells you that the purpose of it is spiritual and for God. On the other hand, the commentators agree with Maimonides' first reason of social significance. Remember, he said that the reason was also to do good for other people, i.e. sympathy with our fellow man, and to promote the well-being of mankind, or as expressed by the author of Mincha Belula, who was a 16th century. And the land shall keep a Shabbat to Hashem. This law was given in order that we may show sympathy for our fellow men who have neither land nor vineyards, and that they may be happy in the Shemitah year, as the rich are happy every year. That's a good point. Giving emphasis to brotherhood and not only to equality, Kliyakar later in Devarim, when the mitzvah comes again, and the added commandment to cancel all debts comes, so the Kliyakar says over there, gather the people together. At that time, I brought that for you. Let's look there. 31:12. Of Devarim 31:12. On page 1096 and 1097. In the Yovel year, Sukkot time, you have a mitzvah of, sorry, not in the Yovel year. In the Shemitah year, Sukkot time, every 7 years at Sukkot time, when everybody's at the Beit HaMikdash, there's a special mitzvah called Hakel. Hakel is the reading of certain sections of the Torah by the king in front of everybody. Men, women, children, everybody. That's what is the mitzvah that's brought in Pasuk 12. Gather together the people, the men, women, small children, your strangers in your city, so that they will hear, and so that they will learn, and so that they will fear Hashem your God, and be careful to perform all the words of this Torah. When is this done? During the year of Shemitah. Says the Kliyakar. The Shemitah year contains factors conducive to union and peace. For since no sowing and planting is allowed, the poor may eat freely, and none may store produce and treat it as his own. There's no savageness allowed. This undoubtedly creates favorable conditions for peace, because all strife originates from the attitude of mind is mind, and people claiming their rights. But in the seventh year, all are equal. this can indeed generate peace.
That's, you know, that's such a tough one. If you think about it, if you are a farmer, you work,
and it should be yours.
Anybody can come, anybody can take, and you're looking at, there's got to be a hard feeling. There's got to be, no matter how generous a person you are, there still has to be a tinge of resentment. It really must take a very special character. You say this is going to foment peace. Is it somebody thinking, oh, that guy, he's so greedy. I know he's got only 4 kids, and he's taking enough for 10 kids. I'm going to get him next year.
Hello, she's right.
You know, there's got to be...
human nature.
Right, there's got to be something. And I love the idea that this is all, it's all equality, it's all tranquility, it's all nirvana. Everybody, what's mine is yours, what's yours is mine. I can take your peaches, you can take my cherries. But there still has to be some kind of... I can't imagine.
Resentment would only... You're saying only if somebody abuses the system.
But even so, you've got to feel something... The people that I know that were kibbutzniking, for example, they really took pride. They love their trees. They do. And when they see
people, not
abusing it, but you know, just picking like this and ruining, or you know, there's a kind of way that you should pick. You should don't take that because you know it.
I don't think they can take from the trees.
I think they can take from the trees. Maybe it's just my sensitivity that I feel.
Some people go
abused. And here, this sounds so tranquil. It sounds so loving. It sounds so idealistic. Mm-hmm. And I just wonder how many.
If you have a whole culture. It does this every 7 years. Maybe this is meant to...
I just find it so...
If they're on the vine. Mm-hmm. The grapes never fall down.
Do the grapes fall from the vine?
Well, you can't prune it. You can't take them off. You can't cut the grapes.
I don't know.
We need an expert from...
Yeah.
Who needs
you know what agriculturalists today believe? That it's a very good idea to leave the land fallow for a year.
Right.
But what they do is they leave every portion fallow a different year.
Right.
It's not all the same year.
Right.
I want to get to the end, but
my response to that is that attitude comes. The resentment will come. Only if you view that as your pride and joy. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you had the other element of it being Hashem, and while you're doing that great job as a caretaker, you have two people can work the same plot of land and do the same loving, caring work to that land, and it'll work for one of them and it won't work for the other. At the end of the day, all that hard work, while it helps, perhaps it's really all from Hashem, and it takes a great person to understand that the work that they did is from Hashem. I'll repeat for you a story that I said last week when I went over to I mentioned about this, about the baby that was taken out early. She wasn't growing, right?
Yes.
And I said to the doctor, you saved another life this week. By all views, I think everyone here would admit that the doctor's decision to take the baby out 5 weeks early, since she wasn't growing, saved that baby's life, right?
And she was.
And she said, the longer I'm in this business, the longer I understand this from Hashem. You know what? That baby could have stayed in there. My son Miracle lived. Mm-hmm. And the opposite for both is true that I don't want to articulate. But it takes a great person with great commitment, yes, with a tremendous amount of self-awareness to say, I put a lot of work into it, but at the end of the day, it's all from Hashem. And that's what Shemitah is supposed to bring you towards. And it must be unbelievably painful to sit and watch people take your stuff. You know, or let's say you picked it at the height of the season and it's sitting in your storehouse and they're coming and taking from your storehouse because you can't lock it from them.
Right.
And that's not on the tree. Right.
And what about the estrogen during some cooking? You can't take the estrogen from this office.
No, I don't
cook. You can't use them.
I don't know how that works.
But I don't either, but I remember saying
that during
Shmita, the only thing I do remember is that there's certain portions, especially down in the Negev,
the Or HaChaim also in our section here at the end of Parashat Hey, let's come, well actually we're finished here, it's after 9 o'clock, so I'll know that's fine, I'm glad that we have, this is a good discussion to make. So I give you the bracha for this week is that we understand that while the strength of our hand does create beautiful creations, that it's all coming from God, and we should have the self-awareness and self-confidence to be okay when other people take our stuff for granted. How's that?
Good,
it is. Nobody said that it's so easy.
This is very, very true.